This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Theme of the month. The month is time travel. Listen to the KBOO Youth Collective 6 to 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of every month. Hope you're there.
The time is 6 o'clock, roughly a couple minutes past, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Up next is Bread and Roses. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Alma Midwifery, offering prenatal care, home and birth center birth, and mother-baby care for the first 6 weeks postpartum. Alma Midwifery provides relationship-based care with certified nurse and professional midwives, as well as childbirth education, yoga, and parenting classes. Located in the heart of Portland at Southeast 16th and Ankeny, or almamidwifery.com, excuse me. And now we are on to Bread and Roses.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Women's News and Public Affairs. I'm your host tonight, Leanne Kranz, and our engineer is Danielle. Tonight, we begin a series on women, money, and empowerment, a theme we plan to explore periodically in the coming year. Historically, women were not permitted to manage their finances, let alone taught how to do so. The legacy is that today, most women feel they lack the knowledge to take responsibility for their financial future. The very idea of doing so can cause smart, educated, accomplished women to become paralyzed with fear and dread. There are deep-seated reasons why this happens. In addition to that long history where we couldn't own property, have a bank account or a credit card, we've also received societal and family messages that women are incapable or ill-equipped to manage these things on our own. And it goes even deeper than that, with lingering cultural taboos that deem financially independent women as, quote, threatening to men. Sadly, women have internalized these beliefs to some degree, and if they're left unexamined, they can sabotage our success and leave us vulnerable. When women abdicate financial responsibility, whether to a parent, a spouse, or a financial manager, or when we block it out entirely, women give their power away. The power to build a life of our choosing, to maintain autonomy in our golden years, and to have the resources to change the world by supporting ventures that have meaning to us. Our hope in this series is to demystify financial management and share wisdom to enable women to take responsibility for their financial plan and ultimately direct their destiny. And the best news is you don't have to have too much money to start, and you don't have to do it alone. There is help out there to begin what is truly a lifelong journey, to be as engaged and thoughtful in our finances as we are in our health, career, and relationships. And the rewards are worth more than gold. Things like peace of mind and empowerment. Our guest tonight is Rebecca M. Horn, president of R.M. Horn Financial Management in Westland, Oregon. She also teaches classes through Clackamas Community College, gives workshops in the area, and is a frequent guest speaker. She takes a holistic approach to financial planning, gets to know all aspects of a person's life, their goals and values, to create a customized strategy. Welcome, Rebecca Horn.
Welcome. Thank you for being with us tonight. Excellent introduction, Leanne. Obviously, women and investing is a passion of mine. The financial insecurity that women have pretty much defines us and our relationship with money. Even though, as Leanne said, we're more educated, we're more involved in financial decisions, and we're controlling more of the wealth than ever, we still are much more more secure in our non-financial aspects of our life. Before we get going on some of the realities that are for women and money, I'd like to give you a definition that I think perfectly describes how our relationship with money should be. Think of money as our perfect lover. All it wants is to serve and support us, to take care of us, to protect us, to keep us safe and feel secure, and for us to be happy. The only thing that it requires of us is for us to give it some of our attention, to spend some time with it, to make it feel understood, valued, respected, and cared about. Or, like that perfect lover, it's not going to stick around. So let me give you some reality of statistics of women and finances. Two-thirds of women said that the best thing about having money is feeling secure, not about the things money can buy. 6 out of 10 of us are stressed out about our finances, and 90% are baffled as to how to save retirement or what types of account to open. 54%, I know it's a lot of numbers, but I really want to stress here that we really need to work on this. 54% have credit card debts averaging $9,000 across 3.1 cards, and 50% of us have a profound fear of losing everything. That's known as the bag lady syndrome, and amazingly, it's totally irrelevant how much wealth a woman has. There are fabulously wealthy women that have great businesses and careers, and that still their biggest fear is that they will lose it all and become a bag woman.
Gloria Steinem has even expressed that fear.
Yes, it goes. It's not just the people that have very little and are close to that line. It's people that have a lot. Women say that financial security and freedom are 15 to 20 times more important to us than money-related status or respect. I think the thing most women feel about money is its security. Men tend to focus on the bottom line, while we women are largely influenced by our values and our emotions. We are better at scrimping than investing. For generations, as Leanne pointed out, men earned the money and it was our job how to spend it. For women, being smart with money meant keeping a good house, stretching that family dollar. Still the same today, 76% of women regularly clip coupons and 38% buy in bulk. So we know how to pinch a penny. We're excellent at that. Yet for some reason, when it comes to our financial security and investing, we go into full-scale panic mode. I remember hearing generations ago, it was not polite for women to discuss money. It was unfeminine. It just was not done. You know, social taboo. Mm-hmm. 90% of us will be responsible for our own finances at some stage in our lives. The only ones who won't are those who either graduate from high school and get married and have a spouse that takes care of them until the day they die, or someone who, same scenario, it's just that once they get so elderly, or we get so elderly, that we can no longer care for our own finances, we have a son or daughter that will take care of it for us. Those are the lucky few that get to live that long. 90% of us identify ourselves as the chief bill payer and shopper for our household, yet we defer to men in building our wealth and security by investing and having long-term money plans. Unfortunately, more women will declare bankruptcy than will graduate from college or being diagnosed with cancer or suffer from a heart attack.
That statistic blew me away.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
The single most significant indicator of financial collapse for women is the birth of a child. In 1950s, the number of women in marriage who out-earned their spouse was so small it wasn't even tracked. Today, it's about 30% of all women out-earn their spouses. Unfortunately, the money we earn, we spend more on face creams, makeup, trying to look younger, products and shoes than we do saving for our own financial future. We make less, we worry more, we raise the children and are the primary caregivers of elderly parents. 28% of us care for our parents, which results in an average loss of $142,693 in wages by leaving the workforce early to be the caregiver. The impact on lost Social Security benefits is about $131,351. Can you tell these are actual statistics? And the loss of about $50,000 in pension benefits. That's a total impact by leaving the workforce early to take care of elderly parents of $324,000. That's a significant chunk of change. Women also take an average of 11 years off to raise our children. This means that we will have less Social Security income at retirement, even if at the end of our career, our earnings are as much as our male counterparts. We also have less company retirement plan contributions because we weren't there to have them deducted from our salary.
And I heard many women don't even participate.
Right. Something like, I have the statistics here somewhere.
49%
of women do not even participate. Yep. The reality is that we need to do more, we need to save more, and we need to be wiser and more educated at taking care of our own financial future. We also, which is a good thing, tend to live longer. If you've ever visited an assisted living or retirement home, at lunchtime, you'll notice the dining room is full of all these gray-headed ladies. There's four women for every one man. So not only do we earn less, and we live longer, so the money we do make has to stretch longer. Mm-hmm. Right now, it used to be we lived 7 years longer. Unfortunately, it's not that men are starting to catch up with the longevity. It's that our life expectancy has actually shrunk a bit because women are suffering from the same stress diseases that men do. Mm-hmm. Women's life expectancy now, however, is 80.9 years compared to 76.2 for men. And a woman who is 65 years old will live on average to 88 years. The reason is once you reach 65, your life expectancy gets even greater. So at 65, we have a 50% chance of living to age 88 and a 25% chance one in four of us will live to be 94 years old. Living to 100 anymore, not that big of a deal. You used to get a call from the president on your birthday when you turned 100. Too busy to call that many people these days. And if a woman has a pension, which about 30% of women do compared to what the 44% of men, women's pensions on average are about $6,000 less per year than men. So it's kind of stacked against us. The good news, too, though, is that most of the wealth in this country belongs to women. Why do we own so much? Pretty much we inherit it. Remember that? We live 5 years longer. We outlive them. It becomes ours. Unfortunately, most women or a lot of women do not control it. And it's control where the power lies. Mm-hmm. So women basically view ourselves as carrying more responsibilities and have the burden of more worries that go along with it.
There were a couple of statistics regarding widows that blew my mind. These statistics might not be quite up to date. If anything, they're probably higher now. I have 64% of elderly widows live in poverty, and they were not poor prior to the death of their spouse. So 64% of elderly widows are living in poverty.
Yes, and part of that reason, I just met with some clients yesterday, and unfortunately, they weren't married at the time. He retired and chose his retirement plan benefits, and so he chose single life. And so guess what? When he's gone, there goes the pension.
Whoa.
Yeah. The average age of widowhood, this really shocked me. I figured it would be much older. It's somewhere around 56 years. Depends on when the statistic and, you know, what study you're looking at. But 56 years. And nearly 50% of women over 65 are widows. 25 of those are widows under age of 45. And, you know, like Leanne mentioned, I do teach classes through Clackamas Community Schools. And every time I mention that statistic, there's one woman in the class that raises her hand and says, I was widowed at 34. I was widowed at, and even one of my best friends was widowed, oh gosh, I think she was probably about 48 or 50. So it's really shocking. And of course, they never plan on being widowed. So unfortunately, a lot of them are clueless as to where their assets are and what they have. And, you know, it's immediate panic. How am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to raise the kids?
There's a statistic that 25% of these widows go through their husband's death benefit in 2 months.
Yes. And there's a variety of reasons for that. We'll get into more of the why and the where for all later in the series. Right now, I just really want to impress upon people that it's important that we know where our finances are and why we have them, what they'll do for us, where they're located in case of an emergency like this.
And because, you know, when you face the death of a partner, you know, you're going through grief and your whole world has collapsed, and to try to then tackle this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I find your brain just sort of becomes like a fog, and something that you might be able to sort out and understand on a normal day, it just, your brain just doesn't want to wrap around it and try and comprehend anything further.
We are speaking with Rebecca M. Horn, president of R.M. Horn Financial Management in West Lynn. She also teaches through Clackamas Community College. This is Bread and Roses. We are embarking on a new series about women, money, and empowerment. Throughout this coming year, we'll be doing different topics to kind of meet women where they are, address some of our phobias about this subject, and really provide information to help us tackle this stuff. We can do it. It's just a matter of demystifying and getting our heads wrapped around it. We are going to take a little musical break right now, and when we get back, we're going to talk about some common financial, I would call them female archetypes, that might describe you, and we have solutions for each of those. We'll be right back.
Yeah, money. Without money, what would we do? We got a little idea. We see what's going on. They say the money is the root of all evil. Ain't nothing evil about money. Because we need that money to pay the bills, to pay the rent, huh? Banks falling, president scratching his head, the economy is down, Wall Street about to lose their mind, up and down, gas prices up and down, nobody knows what to do. You know what we need, though? Gone.
That was Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with Money. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. I'm Leanne Kranz. With me in the studio is Rebecca Horn, president of RM Horn Financial Management in Westland, Oregon. We're starting a new series here on Bread and Roses to be carried out periodically throughout the coming year about women, money, and empowerment. I mentioned before the break that we're going to dig in now to some common female financial archetypes. You might just recognize yourself in some of these, but don't worry. We'll also provide some solutions for each of us to help us embark on this journey of taking responsibility for financial management. For that, I think, Rebecca, you might have a little good news to share after all those dire statistics we delved into.
I think we might have scared women into realizing that we need to do something to take control of our future financial lives, even though we might have someone taking care of them for us right now. There's a Chinese proverb that I particularly like, and it is, women hold up half the sky. So, women are moving up in the workplace. The good news is 45%, almost half of America's millionaires, are women. The number of wealthy women is growing faster than the number of wealthy men. Go, woman. 7.8 million women, I'm sorry, 7.8 million firms, which is about 30% of all businesses, are owned by women. And we added 500,000 new jobs to the economy while other privately held firms lost jobs. So women are becoming a very powerful economic force. Between 1997 and 2007, the number of women-owned businesses grew by 44%, which is twice as fast as male-owned businesses. And sales from women-owned businesses added 1.2 trillion to the economy. So women are definitely advancing in the economy and a force to be reckoned with. The other thing that's interesting is that even though men might earn most of the money, women control 80% of the purchases. So it's still back to that old, you know, women are making the purchases and spending the money. And the other thing I love about women is that even though women earn about 75% of what men do, women's overall contribution to charity is 93% of that of men's. So wow. Women are awesome at opening the purse and giving to good causes. So let's talk about, as Leanne was saying, the different commonly recognized fictional characters who personalize the financial roles that women are creating today. Belle, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Goldilocks, and Wonder Woman define the different personality types of women when it comes to their finances and investing. So let's start with Cinderella. Cinderella is the financial dreamer. She likes being taken care of. She doesn't want to bother with finances. She's hoping that Prince Charming will come along and make everything okay. Fortunately, only 8% of women fall in this category.
Thank goodness.
Waiting for Prince Charming. They feel they lack sufficient knowledge to make smart financial decisions, and they are in denial. They just kind of think everything will work out. The ostrich in the sand situation. They've never expressed that they have any confidence or desire to take control of their finances. Very resistant to being independent. I think it comes down to being scared. They're in denial about the financial realities, and they think it just has to be okay. Something will come along and work out. Refuse to address the financial issues in a responsible manner and avoids unpleasantness at all cost. So I call them desperately seeking someone.
So what help is out there if our listeners recognize themselves in that?
Well, someone archetype who is basically Cinderella, the financial dreamer, is going to have to find a financial planner that they feel comfortable and confident with and can absolutely feel a good relationship, open communication, and trust with that person, because they are not going to be driving it on their own. They are definitely going to be a follower. The next one is what I call Alice in Wonderland. she's the financial avoider. Only 17% of women are in the financial avoider category. And these women are confused by all the financial choices, and they just avoid financial responsibility. If you think of Alice in Wonderland, you know, she's confused, she's worried, she doesn't know which way to turn. You know, she avoids making decisions. She's concerned about her current situation and her future. She asks just enough questions to just create an overwhelming anxiety for herself and work herself into a quandary. She works herself into a quandary, and she just cannot reach a decision. She doesn't feel like she has the knowledge or the confidence to explore issues in depth in order to create solutions and make informed decisions. In addition to her excessive worrying, she's easily intimidated and often overwhelmed, and she can be unrealistic in her expectations. She can be a blamer or view herself as a victim when things don't go her way. So with her, the key is, if that's your personality, you need to find someone who will educate you in a non-threatening way and help guide your financial decisions. Take the anxiety away. Move slowly. Don't feel like you have to jump in. For heaven's sakes, anyone investing with anyone in any product, know what you're buying and understand why you're buying it and how it fits in to your overall investment plan, not just for someone like, you know, Alice in Wonderland. With knowledge comes confidence and power. Next one on my list is Wonder Woman. She's the financial initiator. She feels absolutely capable of handling whatever comes her way. Take charge. Ta-da! 18% of women feel capable of handling whatever comes along. They're confident, empowered, extremely knowledgeable about money and investing, and most likely they will work with someone. They're self-assured, they're optimistic in most of their endeavors. They want to make the best decision, not just the right decision. They can ask sophisticated questions. They've probably pre-researched some of the answers. Thrives on the power to understand financial products and solutions and make the decisions. yeah, I fall in that category.
There are some cautions, though, I understand, for people like that.
There are. You can actually, if this is your financial personality, typically they're engineers, attorneys, high-level corporate executives, people in sales, the real leaders. Mm-hmm. The problem is that, you know, we, because obviously this is the category I fall in, we can be a little bit overconfident in our abilities and maybe not listen to advice as much as we should. You know, we tend to make rapid decisions and implement them. Usually, we've done a lot of research, but maybe we're so confident that maybe we haven't explored all options and maybe looked at the repercussions of investing the way we are. It's kind of like trying to hold back a runaway horse at times. Mm-hmm. So not a bad thing, because they are well-educated and really motivated, which is half of the battle. Mm-hmm. Now, Belle, I like Belle. Belle from Beauty and the Beast. She's a financial collaborator. She likes to handle things equally with her partner, who might not be the best case. if you've got Dumb and Dumber leading the way, not good. About 23% of women like to handle things equally with their partners. They are communicative. They're happy with their marriage, where their household finances are concerned. They usually have extremely balanced in life, provides their family financial comfort and stability. They're cooperative and trusting in relationships. They, you know, she asks intelligent questions and is capable of understanding solutions. She prefers not to be the primary decision maker. So quite often when a couple will come in, she's kind of the power behind the throne, is the way I like to refer to this type of woman. Mm-hmm. She likes to promote her partner. She's comfortable in kind of taking a back seat and creating the illusion that she's taken care of and that the partner is making the decisions. That's quite a mistake to make when you're dealing with someone like this, because you don't just make the decision based on one part of the couple. She wants to be involved, even if she's not the ultimate decision maker. The problem with this is she can defer to a spouse who, as I alluded to earlier with the dumber and dumber comment, might not be sensible. So this person likes to share the power and responsibility. Mm. And Goldilocks. The last on my list is the financial analyzer. This is kind of the ideal person to be. This is the position you want to be in. Now, realize that this is a personality type, and you might want to be. It's just not you, and it's almost impossible to change a lifetime of conditioning and your personality. So you just have to realize, like Leanne was saying, that you just have to find a way to work around it or work with your personality. Mm-hmm. 35% of women are in the Goldilocks financial analyzer category. They thoroughly research their investment options before they make financial decision. I mean, does that shock any of us? Women are so good at comparison shopping. Comes down to that scrimping and spending the household money. Goldilocks financial analyzers are confident. They tend to be analytical, highly knowledgeable about household finances. Takes the initiative and thoroughly researching investment opportunities. They're also good at tracking the results. She will come in and she'll ask good basic questions and is knowledgeable enough to understand possible solutions and implement the decisions. She's comfortable with making the financials. Being the power behind making the financial decisions. And she is analytical and disciplined in her approach. With her, it's important to have clear set goals, and she needs to be an active part of developing the financial planning process. She needs to feel independent and in control. These type of women tend to be the CPAs, professors, researchers. The only problem with Goldilocks is we have to be careful with the financial analyzer. She doesn't get stuck in analysis paralysis. So those are the different categories I've kind of assigned to the different personality types that I see in women and with their finances.
It seems that in many of these cases, you recommend, or the solution to getting started, is to begin working with somebody, some expert who knows what they're doing. I went through this process about 20 years ago when I was making money for the first time and was just trying to get off on the right foot. My grandmother was an investor, and she was a great role model for me and was able to support herself into her 90s and travel the world and really live this autonomous life. And so I began that journey in my 20s, I would say.
Yay.
And, you know, I found someone who, through the grapevine, I had heard that he lived and breathed this stuff, and it was his passion. So I thought, all right, this is my guy. And even though he was knowledgeable, passionate, friendly, helpful, all the good things, the experience was still incredibly intimidating. I never felt more inept.
Oh dear.
Then, you know, he asked me he helped me get started by asking me what I wanted out of my life, when I wanted to retire, what I wanted to do with my money. And I had never considered any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the beginning, there are some things that women need to do internally as well as externally, it seems to me. Would you agree, Rebecca?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One of the things I hear a lot with women I work with, and I do work with men, I don't solely restrict my practice to women, but one of the things I hear when I get women as new clients is they say, oh, thank you. You know, for the first time ever, it makes sense and I can understand what you're talking about. I really like the guy I used to work with, and I know he's very bright, but I just never really understood anything. And women feel intimidated, you know, not just with your financial advisor, financial planner, but my career was in medicine before I switched to financial planning.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everyone says that's such a strange switch, but honestly, I knew from being in medicine, you're still trying to help people reach a certain goal. It's just, in this case, I switched and decided I still want to work with individuals and I still want to help improve their life, just not in the medical field anymore. So one of the things that I noticed was even doctors, you know, women are just too intimidated to speak up or to feel we don't know the questions or that we'll be looked at as stupid or whatever. So it's very important that you have a good relationship and you don't feel intimidated. And one of the things that our goal is with this series of programs is to take that fear and intimidation factor and give women enough information that either get started on your own or do more research or have the confidence and the courage to take that next step, because it can be intimidating, particularly if someone talks in financial speak and you just feel like, oh my gosh, I'm talking to, you know, an aerospace engineer here, and he's going to think I'm completely stupid because this seems so obvious to him.
I was also really torn because I didn't want to put my money into certain ventures. I wanted to invest from the get-go in socially mm-hmm. responsible mm-hmm. things. And thankfully, there are many, many options mm-hmm. out there. I'll announce a link a little bit later in the show. I can't find it at this moment. Oh, here it is. Let me just go ahead and plug sure. this, if I may. Sure. There's a great website that can tell folks out there everything they need to know about sustainable and responsible investment. It's ussif.org. So anyway, just as an aside, mm-hmm. that was another thing. People might be intimidated by, you know, joining this, you know, Wall Street's so unstable and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and there's such a stigma and, you know, nobody wants to be investing their money in something volatile or evil, but there are alternatives. Investment can be
it's
more
like
than
how long
just
is
stocks,
a,
right?
Right. It's like how long is a piece of string? There are so many options available out there that you can pick and choose. And the whole idea of working with someone, or if you're knowledgeable enough to do it on your own, is to have exactly what you're comfortable with. If you're not sleeping at night, you know, the idea is to reduce the stress. You know, 60% of women are stressed over their financial situation. If it's adding more stress, it's not really helping. So, yes, there are just a gazillion ways to invest. And as you said, they're socially responsible. If you're very particular, I have clients that insist they won't invest in things like Monsanto, mm-hmm. You know, the engineered food, Archer Daniel Williams, Bank of America, Walmart, whatever company that they don't particularly mm-hmm. like, they don't want to invest in it. Well, that kind of rules out a lot of mutual funds.
Okay.
Because we have no control of what's in a mutual fund.
But can you define mutual fund just so they have an idea?
Yeah, a mutual fund is pretty much, if you have a 401k or a retirement plan at work, you're in mutual funds. It's a pool of investors' money that an investment group will manage for you. And those investment groups are Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, American Funds, Vanguard, just to name a few, Franklin Templeton, Oppenheimer. Those are some of the well-known ones. So you give your money to that money manager, and it's pooled with everyone else's money. So there's millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions in most cases, that are invested. And you own a little slice. So every slice that you have of that mutual fund contains a proportional share of every single company in that mutual fund. The problem is, or the beauty is, depending on how you look at it, with a mutual fund, we never know what's in there because we're paying that money manager to decide when to buy, when to sell, how long to hold, what percentage of the holdings will be this fund. So, for example, with a client that they only eat holistic, sustainably grown food. They don't want anything that supports companies that are genetically modified or use certain chemicals. Well, there's no way I could assure that in a mutual fund, mm-hmm. that's not there. So there are a lot of other options that we could invest in to make sure that their money isn't going towards companies that they feel, mm-hmm. what's the term I want to use? not psychologically, but ethically, I guess the term is, opposed to.
Do things like investing in property, real estate, or businesses, I mean, would that count in your mind
as sound
investments for
women?
Absolutely.
It's all about diversifying and spreading your money around. Mm-hmm. Before the big market crash of 2002, technology was where everyone had their money, and they got slaughtered if that was where most of their money was. Because certain industries tend to react the same in certain environment or economic conditions. So when the tech stocks went down, pretty much all tech stocks went down. And so you want to have some in all different categories of investments. I'm not an expert, and I really don't know anything about investing in wine or art or antiques. That's something totally different. My specialty is financial securities, but definitely real estate. Real estate is an important part of a person's portfolio these days. It's just how much and in what investment.
We're speaking with Rebecca Horn, president of R.M. Horn Financial Management in Westland, Oregon. This is Bread and Roses on KBOO. This is part of a new series on the show, Women, Money, and Empowerment, demystifying all the nitty-gritty about what it means to take responsibility for our finances as women and build the kind of retirement, kind of lifestyle that we want. And also, the gravy part is that by building money, we have money to invest in other things that are important to us, meanwhile shaping the world. We're going to take another little mini musical break. We'll be right back to talk about more about this series and what to expect and how to give your input. Thank you. That was Aretha Franklin with Money Won't Change You. This is Bread and Roses on KBOO. I'm Leanne Kranz. With me in the studio, Rebecca M. Horn, president of R.M. Horn Financial Management in Westland, Oregon. We're launching a brand new series about women, money, and empowerment. Rebecca has a little correction to make, something she said before the musical break.
Yes, I wanted to clear something up. Apparently, I said Archer Daniel Williams. It's Archer Daniel Midland. Sorry, I hope all of you caught that and realized it was just a slip of the tongue there. So did want to set that straight.
We thought in the last few minutes of our show today, we will give you a better idea of what we hope to cover in the coming year. It won't be every month, but it'll probably every other month. We'll keep the conversation going. Different topics that Rebecca Horn feels are a part of this. We're trying to build women lore is how I'm thinking about it. Currently, we have a missing piece in the lore we pass down to each other, to young girls, future generations. We're trying to build that, give information to you all to take responsibility for your finances, build your life. And please, Rebecca, tell us what we have in store this year.
All right. What we really want to do is hit on topics that are current and that you have interest in. So it's important for you to give us feedback. Let us know what topics you want to know more about. Ones that are kind of on the back burner that I thought might be of interest are women, value, and investing. Defining your values and establishing goals. And we thought we'd talk about that on our next program. Other ones, identifying and setting financial goals. Values and investing was the first one. Picking yourself up and moving forward, newly divorced or those preparing to go through a divorce, single again for recently widowed, maybe about financially blending families, a topic that a lot of us are going through and more of us will be going through because our population is aging, is parenting your parents. That's a whole ball of worms. You know, your parents are kind of becoming children again as far as their finances. It's a very difficult topic, and I have so many clients that are trying to figure out how to create a balance where they're not having their parents feel disempowered. Is that a word? Still helping them without making them feel like, you know, they've totally lost it and they have no control or power. Maybe financial planning for non-traditional or unmarried couples. That's a whole nother area as well.
Can you please speak about that a little bit?
Yeah. When we have couples that are in a non-traditional relationship, either living together or the same-sex couples, they're not protected by the same laws that traditionally married couples are. So there's more financial planning that's involved if they want to make sure that their spouse or partner inherits or is, you know, part of, has a say in how things are handled. It's just a huge area. And now with the same-sex marriage in a lot of states, recognized by the states but not by the federal government. So that creates a whole nother layer. So that's a big area to cover. Creating a legacy, you know, as I already mentioned, women are very good at opening our purses and giving to charities. Our main problem with that is the same thing, lack of planning. It tends to be a spur of the moment. You know, we'll buy 10 boxes of Girl Scout cookies or a cause touches our heart and we get our checkbook out, which is fabulous. I think that's wonderful. But there's a way to do it where we can actually plan through establishing, you know, beneficiaries or trusts and give an endowment and plan on how much we're going to spend and how it's going to be proportioned out. Some women have special needs situations. Maybe they've got a child that's a special need child that most likely will never be able to take care of themselves financially. Or if they can get out and live in society and have a job, it's not a job that's really going to give them adequate income to really give them a comfortable lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So they need to do planning to make sure that coordinating with social services that will also kick in, that that child, when they're gone, is still taken care of and has the funds to live a little more comfortable life. So that's very important. Education planning, obviously, paying for college is a huge expense these days. When I have clients come in and they say, I want to start a college savings plan for my two children. And I ask them how old their children are, and they say 13 and 15. And I just think, okay, watch them closely, watch for sweating, watch for color change. Because when I tell them how much they're going to have to put aside every year to even have a hope of helping them with college, I think they're going to have a heart attack. So education planning, if college is important, that needs to start early. And people just do not understand how much money it takes to be able to even partly fund college these days. Retirement planning, of course, is what we all need to do because hopefully we're all going to retire. And we want to be retired at that stage, not just unemployed. I was meeting with some clients this week and I was talking about, if your goal is to live on the beach in Hawaii. And then I said, actually, your goal shouldn't be to live on the beach in Hawaii. You want to live at the beach. There's a big difference. So we want to plan so you can have that lovely apartment just off the beach.
I could go with a hut, I think.
Yeah, whatever.
I'd like
just
to have
not
some
actually
groceries.
Living on the beach in a tent or sleeping bag. Anyway, yeah, you want to be retired, not unemployed. You want to have the money to live reasonably comfortably and do what you've always looked forward to doing when you had the time and money to do it. And then, of course, we can always talk about credit card debt and debt in general and how detrimental that is. I have what I call a tale of deception, and it's called A Credit Card Broke My Heart. Took me out, treated me wonderful, took me to dinners, bought me all sorts of things, and then demanded repayment and finally was taken away. So anyway, it's endless what we can discuss and talk about. So hopefully we'll get some feedback as to what is interesting to our listeners and hit on those for sure.
Yes. And on that note, we'll be posting this podcast on the KBOO website sometime later this evening. We'll have podcasts of this series posted throughout the year. And there's also an interface on the KBOO website that you can send emails to me directly, Leanne Kranz, K-R-A-N-Z. There's a link there. Let me give you guys some of that relevant information.
Gals.
Sorry. www.kboo.fm/breadandroses is the main interface for our collective. We also have a Facebook page, KBOO Bread and Roses Women's News. So please join us for upcoming details and a way to actually provide feedback. We've been joined in the studio by Rebecca Horn. It's been a pleasure to get started with you. I feel like we're in good hands. You can get in touch with Rebecca at RM Horn Financial Management Incorporated in West Lynn. Her website is www.lpl.com/Rebecca.Horn, H-O-R-N. Phone number also 503-656-4546. You've been listening to Bread and Roses, KBOO's Women's News and Public Affairs show every Friday night, 6 p.m. You might not realize that we are run by a collective of women, and it's the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. It's been around almost as long as KBOO has, and we are just wide open for you to join. Women out there in body or spirit, you are welcome to join our collective. You can be in front of the mic like me tonight or behind the scenes like Danielle doing engineering. There's just so much need in our collective right now, and you're welcome. If you're interested, please just get in touch with Ani Haynes, our volunteer coordinator at KBOO. Think about it. One other thing we like to do on Bread and Roses is give community announcements. And I promise to announce this upcoming salsa extravaganza tomorrow night, Saturday, February 23rd. The band is Melao de Cuba, featuring Virginia Lopez, a delightful woman. They're playing an all-ages show tomorrow night at the historic Bob White Theater. That's on Southeast Foster. Address is 6423. The doors open and salsa lessons begin at 8 p.m. Melao de Cuba is an 8-person group of Portland musicians who share traditional Cuban music. Tickets are $10 in advance, $15 day of the show. You can get them at brownpapertickets.com or directly at the Bob White Theater. You can get on the Bob White Theater website as well, www.bobwhitetheater.com. And we're going to go out with a song by that band. But prior to that, Rebecca Horn, you have one more thing to say.
I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands that I was using the companies that I listed just as an example of some that I've had clients that were not comfortable investing with. It was not in any way trying to infer that they're not companies that you should invest in or disparaging of them at all. I just wanted to make sure that since I did mention them, that people understand that.
Yeah, names will come up throughout the series, but we're not endorsing or...
Right, or recommending.
Degrading any of them.
Correct.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Just an ask. And for next time, as we were talking, we will be doing values and establishing goals. So I want you to think about just a couple things. Mainly, where do you want to be when you're retired? What is your hopes, your dreams, your goals? Where will you be living? Will it be in the city, in your house, in another country? Just ponder on that, and we'll be talking about how to define your values and establish your goals.
Little homework for us, little soul searching. All right, we're going to go out now with a song by Malau de Cuba, playing tomorrow night, the Bob White Theater, 8 o'clock. This one is Aran Kinya.
Moyuba, 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 lorisa, moyuba, 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 lorisa, moyuba, 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 lorisa, moyuba, 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 lorisa. Ako elewa bukenke, ako elewa bukenke, ako elewa bukenke, ako elewa bukenke.
KBOO Portland. We have just got done with Bread and Roses. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Keep it locked. And the time is 7 o'clock.
It's a new year, and Black History Month is now upon us to reflect the issues unique to Black African peoples. Join me, Sequoyna Wright, a KBOO volunteer regular, every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for the month of February, starting February 2nd, as I discuss with special guests Tariq Nasheed, Dr. Umar Johnson, Dr. Claude Anderson, and my very own father about the present state of Black America. Topics include love and relationships, mental health, music, and economics. tune in and join in on the conversation on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock Radio here on the Pacifica Network. On today's show, we speak with Medea Benjamin, the co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, as well as the author of the new book, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, an insightful conversation that examines the use of drones, America's new terror apparatus. As I said before, very, very informative conversation with Medea Benjamin and Davey D. Something that you definitely want to stay tuned for.
This be the one them called Tech Nine, and this is Hard Knock Radio. You know what I'm saying? News, views, and hip hop, baby, all day, all night.
Can I be the one to bring you joy? What's up, y'all? This is Letty C, and I'm here at my favorite, 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 favorite station at Hard Knock Radio, baby.
Trayvon and the war against us.